pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5 Monday. Happy Monday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. We do appreciate it. Text line, you want to be in touch with me, your show host, 251-343-0106 is how you get in touch with the show. Utilize the text line. Coming up on the program, Jennifer Fiddler going to join us by phone today here in about a half hour. Also on the program, Dale Jackson, our Monday regular, and Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show. We get him on about every 2 weeks or so, looking forward to that discussion. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. There's a few things going on here in the news. I guess we have to pretend to still care about soccer. I don't know. I guess it's at least it's over now. But the virtue signaling over soccer. I'm sure some of you are soccer fans. But that was the world news, I guess. For whatever reason, kind of looking up at the monitors, that Iran war, and I just it's a yo-yo, and I don't know how much patience we have for this. The idea here is Iran wants to talk again. Surprise. And I was listening to, I guess, Marsha Blackburn yesterday. She's the senior United States Senator up in Tennessee, but like our senior United States Senator, she is probably going to be governor of Tennessee. And, this idea that the Russians and the Chinese are helping the Iranians because they're able to hit American targets with precision. I was told Chinese wanted this to end, that they wanted this to end because they use the Strait of Hormuz more than a lot of other, certainly more than we do. That's what the word on the street was. But I guess it's entirely possible the Chinese are helping the Iranians and thinking they can force Trump to the table and concede. I don't know. The Iranians want to toll the Strait of Hormuz. Is that even a feasible, plausible thing? Because we're going to win. Anyway, oil trading at $82 a barrel. It's kind of flat right now. That's probably where it's going to be for now. As I imagine there's some traffic making it through. But gas prices, you really want it down into the high 60s to get the gas price shock to wear off. And it could be this entirely possible that the Iranians know the November elections are on the way. And we don't wait till the day before to decide. You start thinking about who you're going to vote for August, September, October. We just play this yo-yo thing for the next 2-3 months. And maybe that's leverage. It's not necessarily that they're trying to impact the outcome. They just want to have that leverage over the Trump administration, knowing that if we escalate this even more, we'll get those gas prices back up to $5 a gallon, and that'll give us a strategic advantage over the United States, as someone was explaining to me. So that's somewhat interesting, I guess, if you're just kind of watching the political news as we go into the month of November and the end of summer. And like I said, the one thing we haven't had this summer, knock on wood, you haven't seen the riots in the cities, the unrest, and it's sometimes ginned up by some isolated event. Are we? I guess we got a month and a half here. But they really have that this year in an election year. I guess it went unnoticed. Maybe it's because the World Cup's here and they are just by virtue of having Trump in the White House, they are able to curb some of these riots on the streets like they had during Biden and maybe the first Trump term. They kind of know what they're doing a little bit better now than they had before. But anyway, the politics of the midterms, and it's not going to be a great night for Republicans. It's probably going to be a good night for Democrats, but it's not out of the realm of possibilities the Republicans keep the House. You see this, the redistricting is going to be very tough for Democrats to overcome. There's not going to be a wave election, I don't believe. Now, I don't want to get like too, you know, optimistic. Just need to be aware. This is what happens in these presidential, when you have a Republican president, Democrats win in the midterms. And when you have a Democrat president, Republicans win in the midterms. That's just typical. But they have some headwinds. When redistricting, and they have Democrat Socialist of America candidates, and they Rand Plattner sort of problems. And you got to get, they got to figure that out. The messaging, you got John Fetterman going on any TV station, any TV cable news channel. At any given time, you'll see Fetterman there in his hoodie talking about what a red line Israel is and abandoning Israel. And that is a make or break thing for him. And I guess he's trying to get that out there, but I don't know how successful he's going to be. This is where Democrats have staked out their ground. In the far left corners. But I think there's a reasonably Republicans have, some reason to be optimistic. And this is, we're probably about a month away from people start really paying attention. And then the polls, you want to show us how they go. I think the polling, the bottom line, or the top line numbers, they call them, are garbage a lot of times because the samples are so off. They don't know how to poll. It's really bad in Alabama, but it's not great nationally. A likely voter in the especially these media polls is much different from what reality is. And that skews the sample. It makes, for whatever reason, surprise, it makes it look more optimistic for Democrats. And I feel like they try to correct it, but they still can't get past themselves. They can't help themselves. They can't get past their assumptions about voter behavior and the way people think. And they operate on a set of assumptions. You see it all throughout society. So, generic ballot. Democrats got a 5-point lead on Republicans. But their generic ballot, the problem is the sample is very weighted toward population centers, toward places where there are far more likely Democrat voters than Republican voters. And they can't reach people in rural areas in America. And it's kind of, we got that here in Alabama with Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. We saw that. I always thought they overpolled Birmingham. You had some polls showing like a Jared Hudson lead. It's just as you had like Kamala Harris in 2024 showing a lead in some places where she didn't, Iowa, for example. So what we have is they don't really know what the likely voter is and what's going to motivate them. Now, there are traditions and historical precedents that can't be ignored. But that's a big part of it. A few other things here, some state news that Mayor Reed from Montgomery is still out there kind of being cranky about. There was a bill last session, and it would have only impacted two cities. It probably should have impacted a few more, to be honest. But this is the only way they could get it through committee, I think, was to assign it to Class 2 cities. So we had two Class 2 cities in Alabama, Huntsville and Montgomery. But it was really aimed at Montgomery and mandating that they keep their staff, their police staffed up. Mayor Reed was all with Todd Stacey, and I was kind of stunned that, oh, yeah, getting police is not a problem. We just need quality people. It's not a quantitative problem. It's a qualitative problem. And was just kind of going through, like, kind of basic policing. And a little stunning to me. I think this bill is going to get done eventually, and it probably should apply a little more. But the problem, and why does it matter to us? Because we, the state taxpayers, everybody in the listening audience, well, if you live in Mississippi and Florida, then not necessarily, but we got to foot the bill. So Montgomery's trying to bond money to go build an arena or a civic center or whatever. And they're spending money on social programs. They don't want to spend money on police. So you have this rampant crime. Well, you can't have the capital of Alabama in anarchic chaos. So the state has to come in. We talked to Catherine Robertson about this last week. And they got it under control, but, you know, the entire state's having to pitch in, if you will. And I don't think that's not sustainable. They complain about local control and that it's a power grab, but just take care of your own problems. Don't have these mass shootings and these, drive-by shootings that are, hitting unsuspecting commuters on the Atlanta Highway. And you got to think, we talked about the Joey Clark, Montgomery needed a new mayor, but like I said, the idea to mandate a certain police level, if you're particularly if you're getting help from all of us in this state, doesn't seem like a big ask. Apparently it is, but that's what he used his valuable time on Capitol Journal. One more thing, our buddy Chris Blackshear, he's a lawmaker from Phoenix City over Russell County, and gambling, he was not as bullish on gambling coming immediately at 27. He said quadrennium, next quadrennium to expect something, but his response, and I know a lot of you are kind of pro-gambling, but to the anti-gamblers, like, how are we supposed to police it if we don't pass a gambling bill? Which just seems a little insane. We'll get to that on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Fuller Show on FM Talk 106.5. Said, Ripper, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning, 251-343-0101. 1-800-848-9606. That's the text line. Hit us up there. Brandon, harder to fund riots without USAID. But, it's just typically there's some, maybe they thought it was going to be redistricting or something that was going to, it's kind of sad. Like the way you spur voter enthusiasm in America has to be to gin up some kind of civil unrest. I don't think they are like, hey, y'all should go out and riot today. But if we have some riots and we depict the country in turmoil and there's, you know, fires burning around Lafayette Square or whatever in front of the White House, then so be it. Mostly peaceful protesters. We'll give them cover. But we'll create this chaos in the streets and blame it on Trump. Mike writes, I've been seeing more of the Trump stickers at gas stations than I say I did. Even the most hawkish of boomers should understand that this garbage in the Middle East we're doing is going to sink any chances of the midterms. They can pledge their undying loyalty to Israel all they want, but if you lose the House and the Senate, then everything will be for naught. Yeah, because, and I agree with this. Like, you if you really, truly, honestly believe that the Iran situation is an objective that the United States needs to try to achieve, that you, whatever your feelings are, if let's just say you're very hawkish, very pro-intervention, you lose the House and the Senate, the ability to wage war is going to diminish. If you lose both, or if you lose one, perhaps, just like as far as funding for defense, getting things passed to shut the government down, that the Democrats could hold the administration hostage to some degree. So this is the point I'm trying to make. Like, if this is something you really believe in, then if there are some political consequences that come down the pike because of it, you're going to be hamstrung because the Democrats in Congress, most of them, the exception of maybe one or two, are just not going to go along with anything Donald Trump does. And there lies the problem. But I think you got to like really, I don't know. I'm sure they've weighed every possibility here, A, B, C, D, whatever, you know, war gamed it. They know what's going to happen. But I guess the trick that they're trying to pull off here is create the perception of a strategic victory alongside not giving too much away. Give what you need to give away, but still get the political shot in the arm from it. But just feels like this yo-yo situation we're in. And every time, well, the Iranians want to talk, but they're bombing Kuwait or whatever. They're Qatar or UAE, they're hitting these strategic targets. And at the same time, it goes from like heavy bombing to light bombing. And I don't think that is really, we are just to be straight up with you, we're beholden to the markets. Maybe there's something we could do domestic production wise to ease whatever we need. But the Iranians know this. They know there's an election on the way, like I said. And I think they may not want all out war because they can't win head to head. But I think it'd just be enough of a nuisance and maintain the status quo, then that becomes something that Republicans got to grapple with in election sitting. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the show. We'll be right back. This is FN Talk 106.5.
to get up. Life would kick him back down. One day, Papa called me to his dying bed. Put his hands on my shoulder, then in tears he said, he said, Patches, I'm depending on your son to pull the family through. My son, it's all left up to you.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line, if you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is hit us up there, 251-343-0106, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. So to come on the program about an hour from now, we'll hear from Dale Jackson from WVNN, and he also writes for Yellowhammer News. And then in the 11 o'clock, our official Democrat response, Parker Griffith. And I am eager to hear his response to the party's vice chairman, Tabitha Eisner, and the idea that they need to Democrats need to vote Republican primaries. But we'll talk to him later on in the show. Joining us now, it's her turn in the rotation. We're always very appreciative of her time. My state representative, State Representative Jennifer Fiddler, is with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for coming on. We always appreciate the time. Things seem a little slow. I mean, there's always the chatter about the usual hot buttons, but Southern Legislative Conference underway. What did we get from that?
Yeah, I do want to talk about that some, but before we do, I want to tell people and ask people to just pray for the Delaney and the Hand families, both well-loved and well-known families in our area. We've had some tragedies down here on the water where each family lost a family member. And just want to say, please, y'all pray for them, that they're going to be going through a hard time in these next weeks and months as they get to a new norm. And also the Angie Halls family, which is Angie was a dear friend to the Republican Party. But we went to the Southern Legislative Conference in this past week. I took a few days to drive up, a few days drive back, and some, you know, personal time. But I actually moderated a session while I was up there, and it was the session was how to help our farmers, and if there's any other way besides the federal government help, there are things that we can do. There was a lot of things that came out of, great things, I think, that came out of that talk, and perhaps some things that we might be able to do for the state. But the other interesting topics that we went over, one was data centers, and we just had what are they? Why do people not like them? What's the most important things that we can do to kind of let people know what they are? What don't they like about them? And the general, I think the biggest consensus was that I heard, and it made the most sense to me, was that we need to understand them, like plan for them. Do we want them, kind of understand as a community, is this something we want or is this something we don't want? Because there's going to be parts of our county or parts of our state that's going to want them, and there's going to be parts of our state that doesn't. So what if you don't want them? What does that mean? Why don't you want them? Do you not want to look at them? Do you not want to have the water going, you know, use up the water resources because they take a lot of water? But those types of things need to be planned out, and we need to be talking about it and kind of know where our communities are. And I've even considered hosting sort of like informative session for the general public, just so I can get some feedback as to where I feel like I know where my district is, but so that we can get educated though as a county and understand what these data centers are and what they mean and how big they can be. And just because if you decide what you want and what you don't want in the beginning, you can actually write local legislation to attract them or not. So that was a really interesting, it's probably to me one of the better things that I got out of the conference. To understand that Virginia's doing it well. So if anybody wants to do some research on Virginia, they kind of the role model up there. They've got like 12% of everything that's comes through the cloud is pretty much coming through that data center up there. And I'm talking about like nationwide. So they're pretty knowledgeable about it. We also, this is an opportunity for the Southern states to come together. It's about 16 Southern states that are members of the Southern Legislative Conference. That's a good way for everybody to kind of come together and understand like agricultural rural issues across the nation or across the South. To committee meetings and kind of brought some things to the forefront. But it was just a great conference.
Let's talk about data centers. What is the, you mentioned the water. What are the, like, I guess, key tenets of opposition?
People are worried about how much water they use. People are wondering about, like, electricity, transmission lines. Can we get the transmission lines to them? Do they, because they're going to have to, they use a lot of electricity. But you can write these laws to say that you can recycle 80% of the water. You don't have to use 100% of the water. They can actually, we can require them to come in and recycle that. We don't have to look at them. You know, some parts of this county or some parts of this state are going to want that revenue coming in. It can really turn some things around. One of the things that we had talked about, you know, in the forest pulp industry, you know, that was one thing we talked about last time I was on, that I was on the subcommittee or the committee to look at how we, the real problem with our pulp disappearing, these our mills are disappearing in our neighboring states, how important that pulp mill industry is to the forestry industry. Is there a way to use that pulp mill for energy source? Does, you know, if the data centers need that much energy, is there a way we can convert some of these and actually use that pulp mill in another way? You know, those are things I don't know. Somebody a little bit smarter than me can answer those questions. But, you know, we need to be talking about them because we've got a pulp mill. The industry is decreasing. It's a worry. It's a concern. It's a huge concern in the forestry industry. And then here we've got these data centers coming on. Where are they best located? Do we want to use these, put these data centers in industrial sites? Do we want to take up existing brownfields? We can decide how we want it. We can decide where they need to go, where are the best places, you know, but we just have to have a plan for that. And so they just talked about how important that was, so we can understand that.
Well, tell me, like, and you mentioned this, and you don't hear this a whole lot, proponents, people who want these data centers, and you talk about the revenue, and I don't know. I mean, do they generate a lot of revenue? Are there places actively seeking this type of, you know, business in their community or their neighborhood?
Okay, let's talk about Virginia. The state of Virginia gathered $900 million this year alone from data centers. Now, I just got this information because I know some of our folks in the state are going, what? Yes, they are going to collect $1.2 billion this next year. They just passed a consumption tax. And it has to do with how much is actually being brought to the state of Virginia through their data centers. $1.2 billion. That's about how much we felt like the gambling legislation would bring us, if we want to go back to 4 years ago. But right now, they're bringing in about $900 million. Now, they have about 7,000 acres of their land and data centers. That's 5,000 megawatts that they're doing, and it's 13% of the global information. Global information is stored in Virginia. So I'm not sure we could ever, you know, that's a whole lot of revenue, but, and we might not want to ever get that or get there. But what could we do? Where could we do it if we wanted to do it? Are there brownfields out there that we could actually turn around and we could try to target some areas that we want to, you know, really look at and how much, you know, bring in some revenues to some of these areas that are that need it. But, you know, instead of saying, no, we want a moratorium, maybe we should say if we have one, if, you know, our area wants one, these are things that we want. We have to have before they come here, or we want them here.
Well, is that like something from a legislative standpoint, or let's just say it's a local ordinance or whatever, that, okay, you want to come here, but you got to be a net contributor to the community. Maybe you tax them, or you charge something, or you get something out of it, which seemed to be a good trade-off, a good starting place. Like, you got to build a school, or I don't know, whatever you could get out of these companies, rather than maybe saying, hey, come one, come all.
Well, they called it a consumption tax in Virginia. I mean, it's something they just added on this past year. So we could go back in and read their bill in the state of Virginia and just see how much they were able to add to the revenue stream. They needed the revenue stream. They want to make sure they pay their teachers more up there. And that was, or, you know, they have this additional revenue they feel like they need. And this is one way to be able to do it. But I do think in this state, there are places that are that wouldn't mind them if they know more about them, if they're more educated about them. And yes, we do have to have the local laws and the local legislation in place, and the local, because of course the state is the way that a lot of our local, you know, we give them authority of what they can and cannot do. So it does need to be decided locally, and we do need to be talking about it. It's huge.
Well, the other thing, and water, you know, like a lot of that could be recycled, and that could be that seems like that's a problem that could be rectified, but the power and the power consumption, and you look at the state. I mean, we already have high electricity, you know, utility rates in Alabama, but I don't think the state is really doing what it can to generate electricity necessarily. And the reason I say that is, I mean, just a lot. I mean, whenever they try to bring an old nuclear power plant online or do something like that, it's just, there's pushback, obviously, from environmentalist types, but also it seems like maybe the power company or people were telling, you know, hey, there's just not the demand for this, but there seems like we could generate more power for the grid if we wanted to.
I mean, I've toured the nuclear plant. I've toured the gas. I've toured several of these electrical plants. And, I mean, I think they're doing a pretty doggone good job, and they're keeping up with what we need. We need to just make sure they're allowed to continue and we don't have any burdensome regulations, I guess. But in our area, we got, you know, our most precious resource is our water here. So that has to come number one. I mean, that feeds revenue-wise the rest of the state in so many ways economically. Is the first thing I think about, how much revenue we're actually pumping into for the rest of the state to actually, you know, have great schools and pay our teachers and all the things. And our water resources are number one thing. But we don't need to reduce we don't need to have so many regulations to where our power can't be generated.
Well, the other, and we're running a little on time here, but the other thing you hear, and I brought this up on the show a bunch of times, they're worried about what the data is going toward, that you don't know what they're storing. And there's also this just kind of fear that it's an encroachment on privacy, that the data is being used to surveil, and, you know, that maybe you don't need transparency in particular based on every aspect of it, but at least, like, okay, this is going to Google, or this is going to Amazon, or this is going to whatever. Like, I think that would settle a lot of people, or put a lot of people's fears at ease. And is there any way to get to that or achieve that?
You know, I don't know. You know, we, our representative in the House that's just incredibly smart about this is Representative Mike Shaw. And, you know, privacy, I agree. I mean, we should make sure we're, I totally agree with some of that because it's, you feel like we don't have any anymore. Everything's, your phone picks up what you're saying and, you know, then it's repeating what you just said. And there may be a context of what you just said. It might not have been exactly what you just said. So, that's a big concern.
Yeah, yeah. That's something you hear, you know, whenever this is brought up. It's not, you know, obviously the environmental and not in my backyard crowd, but, well, I just ideologically opposed to data centers because they're going to be used to track me. And, I don't think we need any more government intrusion in our lives.
Well, it's this ChatGPT is pretty amazing. And the more you talk to people, the more they're using it. And, you know, all that information is gathered. It's a concern. I don't know if government's actually how much they're using it, but it's definitely going in the cloud and it's up there.
Representative, we got to get out of here, but thank you for your time. And we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Y'all have a great day.
You too. State Representative Jennifer Fiddler there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Probably never made a
living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. We need to be in touch with the show. All you got to do is text me, Squirrel Vereen. The people use, quote unquote, the greater good of human rights and dignity and love and care to back up all their passion campaigns, but they want to defend terrorists and deadly cartels. Yeah, well, that's, I guess the good intentions. And I just don't think culturally that's something in America that sells politically. There's just some longstanding traditions when it comes to, especially Israel. And gonna be hard to break. That Mr. Doug sounds like she's still misinformed on data centers. Well, here's the thing, and the water question. We know that these data centers, if constructed properly, can recycle water. Would it be too much to ask to make some kind of stipulation that, you know, up to a certain percentage of your cooling water has to be recycled. Something to that degree. Is that something that we could put in there? That, yes, these data centers are capable of having a light footprint, but it might come at a more cost, might come at a cost to them, and they wouldn't build them that way. Well, if you tell them if you want to build them here, you got to do it this way. What's reasonable? I don't know. Because, we talk about this and the strain, the burden they are on your local infrastructure. Well, before green lighting them, you should telling them what they can and can't build on their property is one thing, but you can do some things to limit whatever the fear is. And then that was kind of what I was getting at there. But to me, the data center thing just does seem, as Joey Clark calls it, it's like the populist issue of our times. But it's just fraught with all these kind of, like, when you ask, like, why are you opposed to this? These things don't really, they don't seem very rational. they seem like the biggest fear, or transparency would solve a lot of this. Jerry, what law does the state of Alabama plan to use to prevent citizens from being free to use their property as they see fit? I mean, there's some things they could do to regulate it. I don't think they're going to outright put their foot down and say, no, you can't do this. I think they would lose a court if they tried to do that. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes.